From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life.
I'm Pete Stoughton.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
Whether your mental or physical wellness brings you to the top of the highest peaks,
or you need a little help with the climb,
The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch.
Pete Stoughton is out today. He'll be back next week. My guest this morning is Dr. Linda Olson. Linda and her husband Dave were young doctors whose story had all the makings of a fairy tale. But then, while they were vacationing in Germany, a train hit their van, their VW van, of course, shattering their lives, and Linda's body. When Linda saw Dave for the first time after losing her right arm and both of her legs, she told him she'd understand if he left. And his response was, "I didn't marry your arms or your legs. If you can do it, I can do it." Linda joins me today to talk about resilience, about humor and courage in the face of adversity, and her new book, Gone, a memoir of love, body, and taking back my life. Dr. Linda Olson, welcome to The Mountain Life. It's wonderful to have you.
Thank you so much, Lynn. What a treat, and especially to talk to somebody in one of my favorite parts of the country.
Oh, I'm so...
Utah. Oh.
It just makes sense that you love it here with how active you and your family are. It's just an incredible story. And I have to ask you the first question that our producer just asked me in the green room. He said, how did she put an IV in with one arm?
Well, you practice a lot, but it was not too hard. First of all, you find somebody that has big veins for the first few times so that if you miss, you still get in. But, you know, I had somebody tie the tourniquet around my other radiologist's arm, and I used a butterfly IV, which has little wings on it, kind of, so that, you know, you could kind of just put your arm along their arm and just kind of brace my forearm against the person that I was putting the IV in and just kind of poke it in. So it was intimidating, but quite doable. And, you know, there was a radiologist where I went to school who had one arm all his life, and so I knew it could be done. And so many things that we do, if you know someone else has done it, you kind of go, if they can do it, I can do it.
You know, so it's possible. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Well, take us back to that day in Germany. And I just had to utter that it, of course, was a VW van, because we know VW vans, as much as we all love them, we know that they are a liability. And, you know, it's just a story that we all feel. I think everyone who crosses train tracks has that little niggling thought, what if my car stalls? And it happened to you. Tell us about the accident.
Well, you should have that little niggling thought, because it does happen. And what happened to us that day, we were traveling. There were six of us, my husband and his parents and family. And we were traveling in a borrowed VW van. So it was not something that I was accustomed to. And when we stalled on the railroad track, the train was pretty much right on us. It came around a corner, and we could see it coming, and everybody kind of thought, we've got to get out. The men got out quickly from the front seat, and I could not get the handle on the inside door to open in the middle. So I crawled out over the front seat and fell. And the drama of the story is that my husband Dave turned just in the nick of time and saw me, and he ran back up. He grabbed me, and he had me in his arms when the train hit. And it threw him back away from me and pinned me underneath the van. My amputations are all train track amputations. You know, if you're on a train track, they just kind of come off where you are lying. So I ended up having my leg and my arm and much of my right leg amputated pretty much quickly. And luckily enough, I was taken by ambulance to Salzburg, Austria, where they had a team of trauma surgeons waiting for me. And I have to tell you that if I had been anywhere else but right there, I might not be talking to you today, because they did a fabulous job of completing the amputations. And my hospitalization there was only 3.5 weeks, and I was healed pretty much. Wow. Couldn't walk, but yeah, and then I was medevaced back home. So that's the story in a nutshell. That's the beginning.
Right. And it's fascinating to me, in your book you describe in the early pages about, well, it's almost like a sense of calm took over and you were talking yourself through it, I believe you never lost consciousness. And you were saying things to yourself like, I think my legs are gone. Just almost as though you were observing it as an outsider or something. It was so calm. How so?
Well, you know, first of all, it didn't hurt. It's, I guess, such an immediate process, and your blood vessels probably start to clamp down. And, of course, they put tourniquets on me very quickly. So I think it was pretty much a, you know, this is what's happened. And I remember going back and forth between I'm going to die, I'm not going to die, I'm going to die, I'm not going to die, and finally kind of stopping on the I'm not going to die phrase. And just kind of seeing, I'm kind of a black and white person, so there's not any way you can kind of sugarcoat the fact that you've got your shoe and foot and leg on the gurney with you. So I think it really, in the long run, was probably one of the most mentally protective things that might have happened to me, was that I was conscious and I knew what was going on. And I think probably from that first hour, I was able to kind of take charge of my life, at least as much as I could, which was not much for the time being, but mentally, I could take charge of it. And I think that was a big part of my success.
And this famous utterance of your husband, Dave, I didn't marry your legs and arm, I married you. If you can do it, I can do it. What an incredible man you have.
Well, that's one of the reasons I wrote the book, because for the last 40 years, people have looked at me, I'm the obvious, you know, person that was disabled, and people have never really been able to see what he's been doing behind the scenes and his love and his support, and he's one dog-determined person. I mean, he just does not ever say die. He just keeps going and pushing, and he's half the story, and I think most people just kind of didn't know that or couldn't see it, so that's what I wanted to bring out in the book. That's who he is, and that was my first reaction when I saw him was, you know, I'm young, he's not going to want to stick around, and when I said that to him, that was his, I don't think he even thought about it. I think it just came out of his mouth, and I laid there in the ICU and thought, wow, I know him well enough to know that if he says that, I think he means it. So that's what gave me a lot of courage.
Oh, it's such an incredible story. If you're just joining me on The Mountain Life, my guest is Linda Olson. She's talking about her new book, Gone, a memoir of love, body, and taking back my life. She is a triple amputee. She's a mother. She is an award-winning professor of radiology at UCSD, University of California at San Diego. And there's a foreword or a prologue written by your daughter who says that when she was young, she thought that's how all moms were, that all moms didn't have two legs and an arm, which I found just so charming and sweet, and just the love of a child for their mother. And also how proud she was and how protective, well, was and is, and how protective she is of you. It's a beautiful story.
It's an interesting story of how that got into the book, because when she was 30, she's now 39, she took an online writing class through UCLA. She had long since graduated college. And the story she wrote was I've used the excerpts from that to make the prologue to the book, because it was describing growing up with a disabled mom. And what you just read was so accurate. It was kind of like the kids just, this is just the way life was. And she thought other people had missed out on a lot of life because they didn't get to do all the things that she did with her mom. And she has always been a very protective, she's a very strong person, mentally and physically. It's like the good Lord said, you know, Linda's going to need a very strong daughter, and so she gave that one to me, and that's who Tiffany is. So once I saw this and had the book almost finished, I thought, you know, maybe I can use that as the beginning of the book, because one of my big reasons for writing the book was to show that as a disabled person, you could have a successful family, you could raise a family, you could live outdoors with help from your friends. And once I got that there, then I thought, well, I've got a son who's 36, Brian. What am I going to do to keep him in the book? So I went through some things he had written many years earlier when he was writing his personal statement for his medical school application. And he had written a beautiful piece about what it was like to grow up with a disabled mom who was a doctor and a dad who had enabled her to live a wonderful life. And I thought, these are the bookends to this book because they prove that you can, here are my adult children inadvertently writing about what it was like to grow up in a disabled family. So they made the book, I thought, much richer and much more, you know, important. So
absolutely. It somehow gives you the feeling of fortitude. And I'm not sure why that's how it makes me feel. Like, if you have kids that, you know, children that believe in you, you can do anything. And I'm sure that you have gotten a lot of, you know, not only from Dave, that kind of support that he's given you, knowing what an independent person you are and how much you value your independence, but that inspiration you get from your own children must just be a wonderful thing.
Well, it is. And I, like I said, in the dedication to the book, without them, my life would have been incomplete. And so they did, you know, they being a mom and raising children and going through their ups and downs are what made me mature and, you know, forget about being a disabled person, having a family and learning how to live together and grow up together is what makes us who we eventually are, I think. So, yeah, they're awesome people.
It's nice to have an identity as something other than a disabled person, as you say, because once someone becomes a parent, it becomes your identity because it's so all-encompassing. So what a wonderful gift. The cover of your book is a picture of your prosthetic legs with some very fashionable blue sandals. It's a really nice cover. It just, I've stared at it, you know, for a very long time. I don't know why. But so for you, do you always have the question of whether to put your legs on or not? And I know that you said at one point that if you had two arms, you would be able to push yourself around much more easily up and down stairs and that sort of thing. But I'm sure you have to put on those prosthetic legs to perform lots of tasks.
You know, that's the first time anyone's asked me that. And I love that question because I was so intent on looking normal from day one that I insisted that they fit me with those prosthetic legs while I was still in the hospital in San Diego in the Navy. And I got them 6 weeks after the accident, I think. In fact, it was during the World Series in, 1979, I guess. And once I learned to walk with them, I didn't go out of the house without them on because I just thought it was so important. And back then, people didn't go out with their prosthetic legs bare. You know, nowadays you see everybody with just the pipes and the feet and no covering on them. Mine were covered with foam and kind of carved to look like legs. So that was a big part of my persona to start with. And I wouldn't go out. It took me about 5 years, I think, to be able to go out or to feel comfortable getting in my wheelchair and going out without my legs on. And once I got to that point, I went a lot. I mean, we travel a lot all around the world. Sometimes I've been in Paris, downtown Paris, in nice restaurants without my legs. And part of where I learned to let go of them was when we started camping with our family friends who are listening to you today, the Cox family.
That's so wonderful. Well, we love whenever there's a local connection. And you had emailed me about the Cox family who lives in Francis out in the county. And tell us about your experience with that family. It includes all kinds of adventures.
Well, this is one of the big things. You know, once you become disabled, you got to set some goals. And I had about 9 or 10 of them. And one of them was to get back out into the wilderness eventually. I loved hiking and bike riding. I think I had been up Mount Whitney a couple times and Half Dome a couple times and Grand Canyon. So when I lost my legs, that was the one thing I was truly afraid to go back to doing. I was afraid that since I couldn't hike and I couldn't do what I had done before that I would get depressed. Mm-hmm. So my college roommate, Carla Cox, who Carla and Roger now live in Camas. I think they just moved here there a couple years ago. So this is Leif's parents. So Carla called me one day and she said, Linda, you going to raise city slickers or get your kids out in the wilderness and let's start camping? And I got off the phone and I thought, oh, I don't know if I can do this. And Dave and I talked about it that night. We finally thought, you know, Carla and Roger have two children and they're strong and they lived in Montana at the time and they're big time outdoors people. You know, if they can do it with us, you know, they can pull me along, they can do whatever it takes. So our first trip was when my son Brian was 5 and Tiffany was 8, and the Cox kids, Leif was 13, and Heidi, their children, was 8. So we had 2 8-year-old girls, a 5-year-old boy, and a 13-year-old boy. And we took off to the south end of Yellowstone Lake canoeing, and we had a 4-day canoe trip planned. And I don't know if you've ever been there. There are no trails, there's no roads, and you can't take motorized boats down there. So they kind of just slung me in the canoes with my legs on because I had to look normal. And we went out and did our first wilderness adventure. And that was the beginning of the next, I'm going to say, 10 years of things like 10-day kayaking and paddling trips up in Quetico and up in Canada and Missouri River. And, I mean, there's just a long list of things that we did with the Cox family. And learned a lot. When we finally figured out how to do it, Dave could carry me on his back in a backpack to Portage. So we ended up doing things that most people that we know don't do, even when they have 2 arms and 2 legs. So
exactly,
that's been one of the reasons I wanted to write the book, because I wanted people to realize that, you know, if you get the right people to work with you and your team, you can go out and do these things. So, and especially people like where you live, you've got that outdoor environment, so there must be a lot of people around you like me, I bet. They're just out there in the wilderness.
Well, I'm quite sure there's no one quite like you, Linda, but it is amazing the resilience that people have. And I'm curious, since no doubt you've been to this area, if you've ever been to the National Ability Center here in Park City. It's a very active, robust program.
I have not. It's been 40 years since I was injured, and within the first few years, I went to Alpine Meadows up here in Lake Tahoe.
Oh, yes.
I did some sit skiing and stuff like that, but essentially what happened was we just got so busy raising kids and having a job and then doing things with, you know, Carl and Roger and our other friends, that I didn't look for those opportunities, and there weren't very many back then. So I'm sure if I was newly injured now, that's where I would be. But maybe I'm going to be up there in November. Maybe I'll come check it out.
Well, I'm sure they would love to visit with you and have you talk to the people. I mean, you know, what an inspiration you are for anyone who is handicapped and or disabled or has had a recent injury that has left them, you know, with something that alters life. So many of us have a bum knee, or, you know, we tear out our knee and we have surgery and we say, oh, is this the beginning of, you know, the rest of my life? Is this how it's going to look? And at the end of the day, you know, look at you as a triple amputee and everything you do. I'm looking at a picture of you in a sea kayak. And it's interesting because the one thing that it struck me as is you must have a terrifically strong core, and I did see you do 22 one-arm push-ups, so I know that you have amazing strength.
You know, I was 29 when I was injured, and I was strong and athletic and healthy, and it paid off, and that's pretty much how I stayed. Is, you know, I'm getting older now, I'll be 71 in a couple weeks, but it was a huge part of my success was being athletic and being strong. So, yes, I was.
In 2015, you were diagnosed with Parkinson's, and I'm so sorry to hear that. And yet I know that how you're tackling this new challenge is just what you do and who you are. So can you talk about that and how you're inspiring others with Parkinson's to stand up to what they have to face?
Well, probably the Parkinson's diagnosis is what kicked me in the butt and said, you really do need to write this book. I had really not spent much of my life emphasizing or publicizing my disability because I was busy and I didn't need to. I was asked to speak at a very large meeting in Portland in 2016 to an international group of people with Parkinson's. And when I got done, I was overwhelmed with the response of people coming up to me and just saying, you know, they saw slides of me butt walking and camping and doing all these things, and they just said, you know, I thought I couldn't do these things anymore. And I looked at you and said, if you can do it, I can do it. And I thought, this is my community. These are the people who were older now, and their skills at adapting may not be as good as mine were at age 29. And they really just need somebody that says, look, we've got a problem. You've got to learn how to accept that you've got a problem. It's not going to go away. And once you've made the journey to accept it, then you need to start adapting. And the things that you can't do anymore, you replace with something else. And some of the things that you can't do the same way, you get innovative and you find a different way to do them. And so I think that was the message that I recognized I could give to Parkinson's. And so I've started speaking, and I could say that's one of the biggest audiences that I want to impact with is Parkinson's people, because I want to see them get out and go while they can and have a good time. So, yes, thank you.
That's wonderful. Hey, I have a question for you, because I let the word handicap slip out of my mouth, and then I said disabled, and at the National Ability Center here, we hear the term otherly abled quite often, and I'm just wondering about the terms and how you address that, and if you correct people when they use a term that doesn't feel right to you. Yeah.
You've never met me. I am not politically correct. And first of all, I would tell you that I am disabled, and I am a little annoyed. And it hasn't been until the last few months that I heard people starting to say, oh, you can't say I am disabled. You should be saying I have a disability. And I go, no, I'm disabled. You can have a disability if you want, but I am disabled. And I have no bones about telling people that, and I'm very comfortable with it. So I don't feel like I had to come up with some new terms or make something to make me feel good, because I already feel good. So I don't use those terms, and there you have it.
Okay, thank you. It is funny, the nuance, you know, if there is one, between disabled and I have a disability. That is very interesting. And yes, it's one should always go to the source, to the person who is being titled as such, and ask how they prefer. And I had a feeling that you didn't care about political correctness, just from reading from knowing you the little bit that I do from your book. There is a beautiful picture of your wheelchair at Machu Picchu. And you know that, if for anyone who's been to Machu Picchu, there are so many stairs, and there are, it's so steep and mountainous. And again, I just have to applaud the efforts that you've made and the places you've taken your family in the world. Most people don't ever get a chance to go to Machu Picchu.
Yeah. And I actually was carried on a guide's back. The backpack frame that Dave made for me years and years ago, we travel with it. So whenever we go, you know, someplace like South America, and it's not wheelchair accessible, I get in the backpack and he carries me on his back. So the Machu Picchu trip, Dave and Roger and Carla were doing the 4-day hike, and I was with another friend. And so one of the guides said, you know, I really want to carry you on my back. And it's kind of funny. Dave wrote a piece in the book about carrying me, and you would be surprised how many people other than my husband and kids have carried me on their back because they saw Dave doing it and they wanted to be part of the party. People down in the Grand Canyon, people down in the Futaleufú River in Patagonia, and it's part of the fun that we have, I think, because they feel like they're missing something if they don't at least try carrying me on their back. So, yeah.
I think you'll be okay with this very personal question that one ought not ever to ask, but how much do you weigh?
Okay, well, that's a good question, because The day after the accident, I weighed 73 pounds, and we spent several hours in the hospital that week trying to figure out how much each leg weighed and how much my arm weighed. Because I used to weigh 105 pounds, so we kind of did that math. So I went from 73 pounds, and over the last 40 years, I've gained a little bit. So right now, I weigh 88 pounds. So when Dave carries me to go backpacking, he'll carry a pack of 88 pounds for 5 miles, and then he'll put me down, and I'll sit and wait for a few hours, and he'll go back down to the car and pick up another backpack so that we can camp overnight and hike back up. So
Dave is a strong guy. Wow.
He's a strong guy. That's why I'm going to keep him.
Yeah, I'd keep him too. Yeah. That is wonderful. Well, your memoir is just incredible. Again, it is Gone, a memoir of love, body, and taking back my life. Dr. Linda Olson, I'm so pleased that we could have this conversation today. And congrats to you and best of luck to you with your current challenge. And thank you for joining me on The Mountain Life.
Thank you so much. It was a real privilege to get to talk to you.
And stop by KPCW when you come to Park City to visit the National Ability Center and your friends, the Coxes.
Okay.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Bye.
Oh, an incredible story. Really incredible.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Mountain Life.
If you enjoyed the show, make sure you subscribe, rate us, and leave us a comment.
If you have an idea for a future show, email us at mountainlife@kpcw.org.
We hope you'll bring your green smoothie and join us next week for The Mountain Life.